Welcome to the Lifetime at Work podcast, episode 56. My name is Greg Martin, and I'm an investment banker based in Toronto. My days are spent working with professionals and business leaders across Canada and the US as we each try to make our mark and impact on the world. On the side, I record this podcast to connect you with these leaders and to hear from them the career advice they wish they had once upon a time. Because yes, the story of our jobs, how they affect us, and why we do them is important. The goal of the podcast is to give you insight and confidence into your career. So each week I interview a different guest, and this week we're talking about law and the future of employment and work. My guest this week is Nikki Avram. As you'll be able to tell, she's from London, and her background began as a lawyer, and she is still a lawyer today, but where she ended up focusing after beginning practicing was on the employment law world and discrimination, to be more specific, and looping in and getting involved in that whole idea around what are we doing at work, our perspectives on it, the role of leadership, the role of work in our occupation and all that. And she has slowly over time migrated more and more towards not only being a lawyer, but also an advocate in that world. And so she's got her own brand, her own website, her own name. She is now a speaker, and she is talking a lot about the future of work, the workplace, what it means, where it's going, the implications. And what is cool and interesting, and what we talk about in the conversation, is how her thinking as a person and as someone trying to get more out of her job has influenced what she's done and then also influenced her beliefs and where she's coming from now. So we touch a lot about in the law world, but not really. It can really touch and be relevant to any industry. And so I hope you enjoy this conversation with Nikki Avram. Well, Nikki, welcome to the Lifetime at Work podcast.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me.
I'd love to start with a brief introduction about yourself, how you got here, what you do, your career history. If you want to just give me the high level, that would be a great place to start.
Yeah, I'm up to many different things at the moment. So I'm a legal entrepreneur. I have a law firm called Howard Avram in central London. I'm a speaker and advisor on leadership and future workforce issues. I'm a podcast guest. I'm a content creator. But starting from the beginning, my background is by trade. I've been an employment and discrimination lawyer for many years, and I started my firm 10 years ago. But before that, my entrepreneurial journey began way before starting that firm. It was made up of building employment and discrimination departments in bigger law firm. So I've had a pretty, I guess, unconventional entrepreneurial journey through law, because alongside fighting great cases, unfair dismissal, whistleblowing, I was particularly known for sex discrimination cases, acting for organizations and the individuals behind them. Alongside that, I was building these departments. Employment and discrimination law was not really a practice area in its own right. It was annexed to commercial law. So I saw a real scope for growth. There was lots of legislation coming in from Europe. I saw it as a vehicle for big societal change, and it did that, and it's still doing that. And I also saw the scope to work with autonomy and agency in building that department. So it meant a rejection of the conventional roles that were offered to me in commercial law that had a really kind of delineated career path, a clear upward trajectory. You knew where you were going to go. And it meant putting a business plan to my partners to say, look, this is my vision. This is how I see it growing. This is how I think it will impact and help the firm, the clients, the workforce. And that sort of motivation to work with autonomy meant that I really felt in control. I was so into it because I felt I had that kind of personal stake. And I was also driven by that notion of bringing an entrepreneurialism to the legal industry. That wasn't something usual at that time. I thought, you know, building a department meant going out to get your clients and not just sort of working in tandem with the traditional perception of what a lawyer did, to sit in a back room, particularly as a younger lawyer, and do the technical work. So I was so excited by that. And the entrepreneurialism that I had grown up with, I got to bring that to the legal environment that I was in. And so dial forward to 2 years ago, when really the conversation has naturally got bigger. And I, in advising customers, organizations, individuals about workforce issues, we were looking at how are we going to shape the workforce of the future? What do we do with all of the things that are changing, the technological shift, the mindset, COVID happening? So really my focus is on that. I have become primarily obsessed with questions around how we shape the workforce of the future, the world that we're in and the world that we're going into. How do we ensure that people feel significance and invigoration from work, because we all deserve that? And how do leaders and organizations cultivate that?
Gotcha. I wanted to get into then a bunch of that stuff, but I wanted to start potentially with just how you got into law in the first place. Did you know, was it something you've always wanted, and more particular, more specific as well, into sort of that field of employment law? Did that come about again from well before, or did you sort of stumble upon that when you began and started to get into the world of law?
Yeah, the law in general, I guess when I was at school and studying, I always wanted to use my voice. I loved drama as a kid. I loved writing. I was creative. I felt the need to communicate, but also had a fundamental sense of justice and fairness. I was always moaning about things not being fair.
Right.
From childhood to adulthood. And mix all that with the legal industry being glamorized, particularly by the US shows that I was watching. I'll show my age here. I was watching shows like LA Law, Ally McBeal. And as I got older, right, there was a bunch of legal dramas. And actually, I realized that you could apply creativity to law, even in the way you frame a legal argument, in the way that you put it forward, in the way that you're drafting not just the pleadings, but also the communication with the client. So all of that together I felt like it was a natural. I went very easily for that industry, and I didn't have a background in it. You know, my parents were small business owners. They're from Island Cyprus, Greek Cypriot. And so my parents came here for survival and to make a living. They had a fish and chip shop. They had a hairdressing shop. I didn't really know any other lawyers, but still it just felt, you know, it felt right for me. But it also meant, you know, I had grown up with all of that entrepreneurialism, and my parents hadn't shielded us from much. We went on the highs and the lows, went on that journey, which was anxiety inducing at times, but it meant that we were really exposed to that, you know, to that entrepreneurial journey. And that's why it felt so inherent, so natural, that I bring that business head to the legal environment.
Right. It sounds like, because law is this very old, been around forever in some form or another, based on history, and it's based on old cases and how we've done things for so long. And you came with this sort of mindset of, hey, I like law, but I'm not, or and the theory of it, but I also have a bit of an entrepreneurial mindset in trying to sort of stir things up or make an impact a bit different. I don't want necessarily that straight trajectory of what is typically in law, which maybe is hard, right? I think that, did you see that as being sort of a hard thing and something that you wanted though to pursue sort of despite of it? Because I imagine a lot of people get into law knowing, hey, there's a straight trajectory. You're associate for so long, you make partner, you build your practice, you retire. Like it's very, you know, linear there. But you sort of thought that it could be different.
Yeah, the main thread that has run through my career is that I wanted to change that traditional outlook, the perception of what a traditional lawyer was about. And I'm so passionate now in talking to people, I'd speak to universities about going into what are perceived as traditional industries and really breaking some of those assumptions down. Because this is an age where everything needs to evolve, and looking at fixed job titles and a very stark trajectory is a thing of the past, and it's got to be a thing of the past with everything that's happening. So yeah, it was difficult back then. And of course you get pushback, right? Whenever you go into any industry, particularly one as conventional as law, you're going to get pushback. What ended up happening is that, you know, bringing that business head and building those departments meant that my career was accelerated. I became a partner at a younger age. I was going to network business events at quite a young year of qualification. So the others that will go, you know, they were senior partners, they were experienced lawyers, but I had justification to be there because I was there to build business. There were even some events that were known to be only attended as men at that time. But again, I had a justification, also with the knowledge that it was absolutely not fair that only men attend these events, because they were the decision makers who were attending these business growth client events. So that pushback was people that really didn't understand that actually you didn't have to work within those traditional pillars in order to progress through the legal industry and in order to have an impact. And the fact that I could envisage that, and employment discrimination law was growing so fast and we were attracting lots of businesses as a result, it meant that I had justification to work outside that traditional perception of the normal trajectory for a lawyer. And I would encourage anyone to do that in whatever industry, and those industries have to evolve. Right. Now in this era, there is no option other than to do that.
So you found yourself with employment law, focused on discrimination cases. You mentioned sexual discrimination. Were those specific, in many cases, like specific issues with certain people who were, you know, bad actors, or did you notice a pattern that was more broad than that? Some, you know, part of the system, part of certain organizations. What, I don't know if you could draw any sort of large conclusions that might have influenced you.
Yeah, I was particularly passionate about discrimination law, and I acted for both individuals and organizations. In acting for organizations, I was seeking to pedal back to say, look, these are some of the systemic changes that need to be made in order to prevent some of those claims from arising, whether right. they be race, disability, sex discrimination cases. So that enabled me, again, to get into the bones of the organization and to look at what changes, what practices could be made. And of course, when claims were made, I was there to put out, say, well, here are the changes that you can make. Look what happens if you don't. And in acting for individuals, of course, there were bad actors. I became particularly known for the sex discrimination cases that I acted on against Paper Press. And that was pretty, newspapers. That was, right. In that industry in particular, there were all sorts of bad practices going on. And that was systemic. And this was before Me Too, you know, for many years I was practicing sex discrimination, race discrimination, disability discrimination. Things have evolved a lot, still not enough. But yes, there were fundamental bad practices. And I was so involved with trying to change make within those organizations and also fight against some of those injustices. But I got into employment and discrimination law when I entered the workforce. I didn't have that much of a notion. In fact, I don't think I learned that much at law school. You know, I saw all of this in practice. It's because as a trainee lawyer, I was looking at all of these cases coming in, and they were being dealt with by commercial lawyers. It needed a focus. It was too important as a practice area for it to be generalized in that way.
So how did it go then from you working kind of on individual cases, certain clients, then to you saying, I need to be a bit more broad with this and create your own more personal brand? You know, and all the things that you did, and you can probably describe them better, sort of what you decided to do after that. But I'm just curious how it sounds like it's a measure of impact. You felt like, hey, I'm having an impact, but there's more to do beyond just executing or working on my cases. Is that kind of sort of what happened with you?
Yeah, I mean, from day one, I was building the departments alongside fighting the cases because I wanted to have that impact. I wanted to grow almost a micro business within a business, as well as do those cases. I mean, it was hard work, but they went alongside each other. But progressively, it's like I saw that grow and then sought to have bigger impact. In the next firm that I went to, I then had a clearer idea of the way in which we should practice and the collaborative way in which we should work. That's some of the pushback that came because of that possessiveness. But if we put the client at the center, then we could become their trusted advisor for everything, from their contract disputes to their workforce, and really help that commercial business to develop and to grow and to benefit people within their organization. And in starting the firm, Howard Avram, 10 years ago, we increased that. We wanted to have further impact in that respect. To almost like we had this vision that we would have this boat. And, you know, our clients would grow with us. You know, we would develop as a business and we would all have this sort of boat together. 20 of our best clients growing as businesses. We had startups, we had small and medium sized businesses, we had bigger clients, and we wanted to grow with them. So we got into the bones of the organizations that we were acting for, as well as the individuals behind them. And it was more holistic. It went even outside of the law. We were really interested in the industry, in the businesses, in the people within those businesses. And that's really served us well. That will enrich any organization if you take that level of interest in the clients that you're serving. And that service, that going above and beyond in that way, was really important to us. It still is. And it always will be. And that's one of the things that I preach it to anyone who will listen. That level of service makes the difference. That's what makes the impact. That's what makes the client feel that sense of belonging with your organization. And the workforce will feel that as well. I've developed a leadership lesson series, which one of the first leadership lessons that I wrote and I gave this speech to other leaders was about applying the principles of hospitality to leadership and to work. Like, how can we serve others in the same way that I was serving my family guests, you know, who came to our home on a Sunday, because we sought to present the best version of our home. So that goes into the heart of service, and that was at the center of our organization. And then again, the increased sort of impact, I think I'm seeing it in a wider sense, not just the organizations that we're serving, but looking at what platforms I can speak on, what platforms I can work with in order to get some of that messaging out.
Yeah. So today you're an expert and you speak on, I think, what you just describe as the future of work and leadership. What's wrong with work? Or what, you know, maybe taking a step back, and where do you see the big pitfalls and maybe the symptoms for that?
Yeah, I think there's nothing, you know, there's nothing bad per se. You know, this is the need to evolve. The conversation has got bigger. The conversation around the technological shift that's happening. We're in a God, I hate talking about COVID, but we're in a post-COVID era. You know, that had a massive impact in the way we work. And it also caused people to focus on the purpose, the why they're working in the way that they're working. You know, it felt a bit robotic before in the 9-to-5, the day-to-day practice. People are a lot more focused on, you know, well-being around work, but also the purpose around it, that commitment to their overall vision. So in looking at how we address that, how do we address that as individuals, and how do leaders and organizations cultivate that? There are so many different aspects to it. And there are pivotal moments throughout my career that has focused my mind on all of these concepts. But it's like I haven't had time to stop, think, and speak about them. I'm in that place. Sure. Now, I feel the need somehow to talk about it. Many pivotal events, not just starting my own business, but even some of the some of the things that were going on in my personal life, that having children, you know, when I had my daughter now nearly 12 years ago, it focused my mind, because you go through such a life-changing experience. And everything that I did thereafter was, I had to be sure that it was worthwhile. That was my rule. You know, I was always going to be a working mum. But I, you know, that means going out to work, and me and my husband being at full speed meant that it had to be worthwhile. The why I'm doing it, and the fact that I wanted impact and forward motion in what I'm doing, that was really important to me. And when I had my son, the business was at quite an early stage. At that time, we had Howard Avram, and I went back to work 2 weeks after I had him. And that was, you know, I don't wear that as a badge of honor. I wouldn't suggest that that's a good idea for anyone, for any parent, let alone a woman. But I did that because I had a commitment to the vision and, you know, seeing the fact that if I worked in that way at that time, it would lead to being there later on in a different capacity for the children. The business needed me at that time. Okay. And all of the, you know, all of the kickback that you get from people. And this was a few years ago. Was it now eight, nine years ago? So people didn't necessarily respond to that very well. You know, even the clients who I was serving, who were benefiting from my spending time away from the home, questioning, who's with the children? I'm getting all of the comments, you know, particularly from my male clients, male colleagues, to say, oh, I'm so lucky. My wife's on the home front, so I can bring my full attention to the workplace and to what I'm doing. But what caused me to carry on was that commitment to the vision, and it focused my mind. And what I've realized over time is that people are not that different to me. I'm not that unique in my want to work with ownership and have agency over what I'm doing, and that need for forward motion. And that's why I talk about it in the context of work now and work going forward. There have been a bunch of studies done, a neuroscientist, a study I read not long ago, Dr. Tali Sharot, referred to a study where people ask, what brings joy? What elicits joy? And I think it came at number two. Number one was purpose. Number two was the need for control, to have agency and ownership over what we do. So it leads back to that question. How do we ensure that people feel invigorated and significance at work? All of those things, all of those concepts happen to align with, I think, the mindset transformation that needs to happen in the world that we're in, the world that we're going into. And I've got so much to say on that, but it's pivotal moments that have brought all these things to light. But it's now that I feel the need to voice them. And also I'm at a stage where I can, and I almost feel it's incumbent. I feel it's my duty to do that.
And does that come from a desire to make work more enjoyable or fulfilling? Or where does that come from?
Yeah, I think it's really important. In every aspect of people's lives, I have always struggled with the concept of work-life balance, in that term has implied to me that there are cross purposes.
Right.
But I have always seen as one platform being able to enrich the other. So when I'm having a negative experience at work, it impacts different facets of my life, my personal life. But they're fundamental things. We all have a bad day in the office, right? But doing something that doesn't align with your purpose, which doesn't align with your overall vision, when we don't have jobs that align with our vision and strengths, that causes a lot of anxiety and unhappiness. You know, when I've gone through business partnerships or even taken on clients where they don't align with my core principles. I'm not talking about going into business just with like-minded individuals. I'm saying that when you do that, with people, organizations who are cross-purposes with your core principles. Some of mine are integrity, transparency. When I've done that, it's caused so much upset and anxiety that it's affected my sleep. It's affected my presence in the home. I'm not really there. I might be there in body, but I'm not really there in spirit. So I believe that this impacts every aspect of life. And that's why I think it's so important. And part of the description of working in our preferred discomfort, that's working intentionally, pushing boundaries that we know will lead to that growth and invigoration, even if it's been uncomfortable because of the fear at the outset, is again part of that invigoration and that growth. And I've so many instances of working in my preferred discomfort. In fact, I think I'm going through it now in, you know, looking at the growth of the business, building my personal brand. And that's not been an altogether comfortable transition, or even just letting go from the day-to-day operations of my firm and stepping back so that I'm not necessarily the perennial expert. I'm not being the smartest person in the room. I don't know if I ever was, but look, I was right. Practicing law for all those years, so I had a certain level of expertise. I'm talking about so many different aspects now that touch on different elements of work and leadership. And some of that is discomfort, but I'm growing. And it's leading to invigoration, growth, having that wider impact. And I think that's really important. And I talk about the world we're in, the world we're going into. We can't talk about that without talking about the massive technological shift that's coming about from AI and machine learning, right? That change is massive. And the pace of that change is quickening. You know, and in order to have that mindset to work alongside and to move forward in a positive way, we need to. You know, we hear a lot about unlearning to relearn. What that means for me is really focusing on the augmentation of that, right? For the augmentation that AI can bring about, we want that. AI is unique because it's consumer-led, because we want to be augmented. We want to leave the grunt work behind. That means unlearning that traditional linear way of how we approach professional development. You know, it's that additive, that adding to your learning constantly. You go deeper into that area of expertise.
There are a lot of people who I feel their approach to work is that they do want it to be separate, that they don't necessarily want it to be a huge, overwhelming part of their life, that they want to be able to leave it, that they don't necessarily. Maybe not that they don't want autonomy, but that they want to be told what to do. And it's more so about getting in there, getting the job done, getting out. Is that just an old way of thinking? Can that be a personality that just some people have? Or do you feel like for that ultimate fulfillment, enjoyment, perspective, et cetera, that you sort of need more than that?
I think there is some, you know, there is something about everyone has a different personality, of course. I think we all have different bandwidths for things. I think, for example, we all have some kind of appetite for working beyond our comfort zone. And I think that's varying according to the individual. But I also think that the portfolio career mindset is something that will resonate more going forward increasingly. And, you know, not just we talk about side hustles and we talk about, okay, this is your mainstay career. Then we've got a side hustle and then maybe I pivot and go to that. That's my passion project. We can look at that. Even if one or two are not money making instantaneously, we can look at how they sit alongside each other. And that's what I think will grow going forward. That natural mindset around having a multitude of different things and being that individual anchor in the middle and building up skills, developing character traits that relate to those different aspects of life. I've said before, you know, I'd struggle with the work-life balance and that separation. But I do think genuinely that if you are going to do a bunch of things that don't make you happy, and you're having to work for the most part of the day, then that is going to bleed into your personal life. You know, the more I do things that invigorate me and that brings significance, the less it feels like work in that traditional sense. But I also find it freeing. You know, before I was very stark. There was a very big dividing line between my personal life and my professional life. So I would go to partnership. I would go to interviews to interview for a partnership role at a firm. I would remove my wedding rings. I would not talk about my children. And part of that was the stereotypical assumptions that were being made about women at my age of what was going to happen going forward, the time that I might take off, that all of those things. And I was trying to be, you know, stand shoulder to shoulder to be seen as an equal to my male counterparts. But it was also that want to keep everything separate. And I found that a struggle in the end. So when we started my firm 10 years ago, my role was to bring that whole self to work. I was able to service clients in full, but also talk about the fact that I was a wife, mother, all at the same time. And I was open about the fact that at the time I wanted a second child, but we were also delivering a great service and able to fight cases and able to advise companies and help those organizations. So I felt that was freeing. I'm not talking about wearing my heart on my sleeve entirely at work, but there's a professional vulnerability that you can bring to the fore, and that can be really freeing.
Yeah. So I'm curious then what advice you would have for some young person getting into the profession of law, just given that you're rooted in it and have a good familiarity there. And we could even extrapolate that to any other career, but you're thinking about it, you want to do something, you want to get an education, you're a young person, you want to get an education, you want to be able to then get a job in there, but you also then want to, over time, have that ability to create an impact, to be unique, maybe flex an entrepreneurial muscle. How do you do that within the law context?
Any industry that has that conventional, traditional perception, like you can't move, you have to go into it and then you have to really earn your stripes from the years of qualification that you have and that you have to abide by this sort of hierarchical structure. No, it doesn't have to be that way. And I said before, I speak a lot to universities to say that, you know, first of all, these traditional industries are having to evolve. You know, anyway, otherwise they won't survive in this era of uncertainty, but also with this huge technological shift. That is impacting the legal industry more than most industries. So the mindset around that has to evolve. And I say, don't be governed by that conventional mindset. You can bring yourself, you can bring your entrepreneurialism to that industry, and you can look at how you are to have an impact. Now, any organization will have, hopefully, the values that bind everyone together, the actionable principles that build those pillars. And there'll be kind of mechanisms that engender certain practices. But if you go in there and you can find you can bring your individuality and find your space within those pillars. Those are the broad guiding principles, but you don't have to want the same trajectory as the others around you. You can move to the side. You could look at other practice areas. Where is there a need for growth in terms of a practice area, or looking at what organizations that you're servicing need? That putting a business plan on the table in my early days came entirely from problems that were coming in from clients about their workforce that wasn't being serviced properly, and looking at the amount of legislation that was coming in from Europe, and also feeling that I wanted to be part of that journey of driving discrimination, anti-discrimination laws in the right way and practicing them in the right way. And now more than ever, I think organizations are ready for that. say to Gen Zers who I'm talking to, how lucky are you guys? Well, I feel like I've had a Gen Z shoulder on my head on my shoulders for years now. And I've always wanted to disrupt and innovate. But I was confined in a way by some of those hierarchical processes. We have so many examples now. I mean, they're not, not necessarily from law firms, but we can apply the principles. We, Netflix talks about wanting to have higher cancellation rates because otherwise they're not failing enough. They're not failing enough because they're not taking enough risks. You got Jeff Bezos with these well-known two-door policy that you can execute on the decisions that you make as long as they're two-door. And we have all those examples of, all the iterative behaviors, looking at where Twitter came from. That came from an audio podcast and the shorter comments having traction. Alexa came from a failed, I think it was a failed team who were working on the Amazon phone, and that led to Alexa being born. We have so many examples. The safe to fail language that we hear all the time. The world's ready for you is what I say to smash some of those conventions and some of those perceptions. And if you go in there and you work in collaboration with the firm, I didn't go there all those years ago and say, look, here I am and I have all of these ideas and this is how I want to advance my career. I looked at what would benefit the organization. I looked at what would grow the business. And then I looked at how my vision and my strengths could align with those of the organization. And as long as it's done consciously in that way, you can have those conversations and you can take things forward. I think there is a huge appetite for that, even in conventional industries like law.
Right. Are there any, you mentioned leadership lessons, and I wondered if there was any that you wanted to share or that may tie in well, other than sort of the short one you mentioned around hospitality.
Yeah, I mean, it's a series and it's really around taking a really quick step back. It's really around using the incredible bank of wisdom that we have from life and applying that to work and leadership. Because when we look at any positions, we're looking at a boss position or a management position, there's often that hesitance. I haven't got the skills to go into that. And not everyone has, honestly, but you can apply some of those principles that you have gained just from life and apply those to the boss position, to the management system, to the management position, and really build that leadership mindset from that. It doesn't always have to come from your professional journey. And it's so important that we bring our individuality to work so that there is a diversity of people in any workplace. And bringing that is like the gold dust. Organizations should be grateful for that. So I've written a bunch of leadership lessons with that in mind. And some of them, I mean, they have ridiculous titles, like the leadership lessons from the Greek Cypriot kitchen, the leadership lessons from the best pizza in Naples, right? I travel there regularly. My brother-in-law lives there. And that was focusing on this one pizzeria that's been around for generations. It's really well known. And they're really focused on innovating on new pizza bases. They've got new pizza restaurants in New York. They've got these new pizza stands that are popping up all over Italy. And they're really about moving things forward, innovating, but looking at what they can bring from the past, from the generations, not being shackled by it though. And it's really that real mix of innovation and tradition. And I think there's really something in that. The principles of hospitality from the Greek Cypriot kitchen, on the face of it, those are really traditional values. How we serve others, how we bring present the best version of our home or the office or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. But that can be applied to an innovative and forward-thinking workplace. The most recent one I wrote was the leadership lessons from the sisterhood. And I mean it in the actual sisterhood. I've got two older sisters. I'm one of three. And I wrote that and posted it on International Women's Day. That was about the fact that I have felt brave. I have felt that I'm able to take risk, partly because I feel that I have that support. We have each other's backs. And applying that to work and leadership is so important that organizations function in a way where people feel that they have each other's backs. That mutual support, that collective backing is important, and it breeds breakthrough. It breeds innovation. It's that safe to fail environment. And there are lots of good examples in different corporations. Zappos has a great example. They talk a lot about, they have these kind of daily stand-up meets. They promote that so much, and that there are different examples of that. I have so many examples from my own career journey where in some instances I didn't always feel that. I've been in boardrooms where colleagues try and outsmart me with some legal principle. But does that help the client? Is that what they really want? Two lawyers from the same firm advising them in different manners? Well, it's not. So cross purposes with what they want. And also it makes me feel like I'm guarded. It doesn't, that wouldn't make me feel safe to go forward and come up with new ideas and, you know, and be bold about what I want to do, which may be beneficial to the firm. There's so many different principles that we can take from life, people that we're inspired by, places that we go, life experiences from your upbringing, from growing up. And I really try to encourage that community. What life lessons do you have that you can bring to the workplace? It's particularly useful for young people who perhaps haven't yet entered the workforce in that traditional way. They may, you know, they may have done sort of a particular university. They may have had sandwich years or work experience, but be bold when you go into the workforce. I don't think that you're going in there with a blank sheet. You have a wealth of experience from your life, from different instances. Everyone has them.
Right. I want to ask you about goals that you have, the impact that you want to have for the remainder of your career. Do you have kind of key objectives that you're trying to achieve, things you want to do? And when you look at the big picture, what is that?
Yes, a big question. I used to be quite Stalin-esque in my approach, like 5-year plans kind of thing. I'm not anymore. Everything that I do, I try and do it boldly, but with an appetite to iterate and to explore. I've really got my explorer hat on now. So I want to be bigger and bolder I had some difficulty, some discomfort initially in this kind of building personal brand, which was really just about talking about my concepts against the looking at supporting the growth of the business. But I realized one enriches the other. You know, the business brand is helped by my personal brand because it's more relatable, trustworthy. Everything is part of that same platform. So I want to continue to develop the concepts that I think will help people to feel invigorated at work outside their comfort zones, and be adaptable and multilingual in their approach. That shape shift and the ability to do that, I think, is crucial in the future, in this whole question around how we shape the workforce of the future, because that will help everyone adapt as the world adapts, so that they don't feel that they're being left behind. I don't want to end on a sort of negative note, but you know, it's a McKinsey study that I posted about the other day, which I think it was 1 in 16 people will have to change occupations by 2030 because those jobs will become obsolete. So if we look at what AI is bringing about, the focus on augmentation needs that mindset, that unlearning to relearn, so that we are transferable, so that we are fluid, and we're not stuck in that era of a fixed job title. And this is my area of expertise, and I'm going to stay in that lane, is to really sort of develop all of that in an effort to help people and to help organizations and leaders cultivate that in the right way.
Yeah, I was going to say, if people want to learn more, follow you and dive in a little bit further into what you're doing, what's the best way to do that?
So Nikki Avram, Nikki with 1K, nikkiavram.com is my website. That's pretty much where I live. And you can book me for keynotes, more podcasts, I guess. But also, I'm on the main social media platforms, primarily LinkedIn and Instagram. That's where you can find me. And again, it's just Nikki Avram. I have the good fortune of having quite an unusual name.
Yeah.
And I would love to, yeah, build the community around the Leadership Lessons series. And also speak at all sorts of events with a view to talking about those concepts.
Great. All right. Well, I'll link to those on my website as well. And thanks for joining me today on the Lifetime Work Podcast.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you're a fan of the podcast, please rate or like it on Spotify or Apple. That always helps in getting the podcast out to more people. You can also follow us in the podcast on LinkedIn and share or just even like any of the content that is coming out there or from my page. That also always helps promote it. I'll have lots more great episodes coming for you in the future. And until then, it's good to stand out.